Today is Wednesday, December the 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, recovery efforts halt on New Zealand's White Island after a deadly eruption, as concerns grow about a possible second blast. Plus, Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi defends her nation against charges of genocide.
Regrettably, the Gambia has placed before the court an incomplete and misleading factual picture of the situation in Rakhine State in Myanmar.
And Britain heads to the polls tomorrow, what many hope will bring about an end to the debate about Brexit. Those stories and more are all coming up next. Recovery operations are on hold as tremors increase around the volcano where a group of tourists died in an eruption in New Zealand Monday. Reuters' Caroline Malone has that story.
There's a 50-50 chance the volcano on New Zealand's White Island could erupt again. It's where a group of tourists lost their lives to steam and hot ash earlier this week. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said getting back there is of paramount importance to recovery teams.
They've been receiving information and advice from GNS, from technical experts, as to the best, most appropriate time for them to be able to return to White Island to undertake that recovery. But having spoken to many of those involved in that operation, they are very, very eager to get back.
But conditions were still dangerous Wednesday, and authorities say they do not want to put any more lives at risk.
We will make decisions based on all of the facts that we have got, and we will not be moving there until the situation is safe for us to operate in.
Emergency crews described Monday's aftermath as overwhelming. Photos show a helicopter with charred rotator blades broken off. 47 people were on the island at the time of the eruption. Dozens are injured and are being treated for burns in specialist units. 14 are known to have died or are missing, with aerial surveillance showing no signs of life on the island.
And it's a really sad, sad time for all of us.
A local Maori community leader says they've performed a traditional ritual to help people retrieve the dead. And at a nearby port, locals bid a sad farewell to the cruise ship that had brought the tourists to the island. Thousands of people visit every year to what is sold as the world's most accessible active marine volcano.
That was Reuters reporter Caroline Malone. The AP's Charles de Ledesma explains why researchers are so concerned about the readings on White Island.
The GeoNet Seismic Monitoring Agency says tremors on White Island have been intensifying to a level not seen since an eruption in 2016. Meanwhile, Australia is sending a military plane to bring some of the Australians injured in the eruption back to Australia for specialist medical care. Authorities are expecting to transport 10 injured patients to New South Wales and Victoria states beginning Thursday. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Somali security forces shot to death five attackers who officials said were behind a raid Tuesday evening on a hotel near the presidential palace. Officials say at least five people were killed in the attack and scores were rescued, according to those officials. Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack and says it was carried out by their suicide infantry. The U.S. military says a powerful suicide bombing targeted a medical facility under construction near Bagram Air Base, the main American base north of the Afghan capital. Six Afghans were reported wounded. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for that attack. The attackers struck a facility being built to help the Afghan people who live in the area, according to the U.S. military. And a U.S. spokesman later said that some armed attackers remain inside the medical facility and that while it was still an ongoing situation, it was isolated to the clinic building. Danish police say they have conducted operations throughout the country related to a suspected preparation for a terror attack with militant Islamist motives. The United States on Wednesday imposed sanctions on shipping and aviation industries over the transportations of lethal aid from Iran to Yemen and weapons of mass destruction proliferation. Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi began her defense against accusations of genocide against the Rohingya Muslim minority.
Regrettably, the Gambia has placed before the court an incomplete and misleading factual picture of the situation in Rakhine State in Myanmar. Yet, it is of the utmost importance that the court assess the situation obtaining on the ground in Rakhine dispassionately and accurately.
The African nation brought the lawsuit to the International Court of Justice in The Hague last month, accusing Myanmar of violating the 1948 Genocide Convention. The Nobel Peace Laureate, once feted in the West as a heroine of democracy, spoke for about 30 minutes in the courtroom. The Netherlands, in defense of the actions of the Myanmar military, which she said did not constitute genocide.
If war crimes have been committed by members of Myanmar's defense services, they will be prosecuted through our military justice system in accordance with Myanmar's constitution. It is a matter for the competent criminal justice authorities to assess whether, for example, there had been inadequate distinction between civilians and RSF fighters, disproportionate use of force, violations of human rights, failure to prevent plundering of property or destruction, or acts of forcible displacement of civilians. Such conduct, if proven, could be relevant under international humanitarian law or human rights conventions.
In 3 days of hearings this week, judges are hearing the first phase of the case, Gambia's request for provisional measures, the equivalent of a restraining order against Myanmar to protect the Rohingya population until the case is heard in full. More than 730,000 Rohingya fled Myanmar to Bangladesh after the military launched a crackdown in western Rakhine State in August of 2017. U.S. President Donald Trump said that congressional Democrats approving the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement did so because they were embarrassed over impeachment. The deal was announced on the same day that impeachment charges were made against President Trump. Both sides hailed the deal as a win for American workers. House Democrats announced earlier that two articles of impeachment against Mr. Trump, those being abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The president told his supporters last night that he did nothing wrong to warrant what Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi called a somber step.
They're impeaching me, and there are no crimes. This has to be a first in history. They're impeaching me. You know why? Because they want to win an election, and that's the only way they can do it.
Now, joining us on the phone to help unpack the next steps is VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Catherine, welcome to the program.
You're so welcome.
So we heard Jerry Nadler unveil these two charges yesterday, and now they're going to meet this evening to debate them in the House Judiciary Committee. What exactly is going on? Because a lot of people outside the United States, they hear the word impeachment. We know that's a process to remove the president. But President Trump is not impeached yet. They haven't even voted on these articles.
Right, exactly. So in the way that we do things up here on Capitol Hill, there's definitely a procedure and a process to get something to a full vote in the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, we know that that full vote will happen next week. But first, what needs to happen is for lawmakers to actually look at the piece of legislation and consider it, a process that's called marking up. And it's quite honestly very tedious. And I expect that when we get started this evening, there is going to be a lot of procedural fighting. Republicans are going to try and slow down this process in any way that they can, so much so that lawmakers are expecting to work tonight and then into all of tomorrow on this issue.
Now, as you mentioned, a lot of procedural fighting perhaps between the Republicans and the Democrats on the committee. We saw that during the hearing earlier this week. This is coming, as you said, you know, working tonight, all day tomorrow. Representative Collins liked to say this is a clock and calendar issue because the House is getting ready to go on December recess. What can you tell us about the timetable that people are looking at here?
That's right. To be quite frank, the timetable is pretty chaotic because, as with most things Congress, we have a lot to do at the end of the year. Lawmakers like to save everything for the last minute, and the to-do list is pretty significant. We have the newly negotiated USMCA trade deal that Congress is going to, the House at least, is going to try and pass before the end of next week. We have to fund the government so that it doesn't close on the 20th of December. And then, of course, we have impeachment. So that's a lot for lawmakers to do when they have about 8 days left in session. So things are packed in here, and it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
We have about 15 seconds left. Is there any risk that, you know, members of Congress could be called back during this interim period?
Well, as long as we get the government funding passed and as long as the House passes impeachment and then hands it over to the Senate, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that impeachment, that trial, won't start until early next year in January.
Catherine Gibson reports from Capitol Hill for VOA. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're so welcome.
And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to a recent assessment, Greenland is losing ice 7 times faster today than in the 1990s. The appraisal indicates that if the current rate of ice melt on the world's largest island continues, some 100 million people will be flooded each year by 2100. When you add in ice melt from other parts of the world, that number of people affected jumps to around 400 million by the end of this century. The recent Greenland ice melt assessment was conducted by nearly 100 polar scientists who belong to an international scientific collaboration called the Ice Sheet Mass Balance Intercomparison Exercise. The group's findings, published in the journal Nature, show that Greenland has lost 3.8 trillion metric tons of ice since 1992. That was enough to boost global sea levels by 10.6 millimeters. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Britain is bracing itself ahead of a rare winter election scheduled for Thursday, tomorrow, which could be affected by inclement weather across the country. Rain is forecast over most of the United Kingdom, and snow may even be possible. That could cut into the turnout in what many are styling as a landmark vote that will determine the outcome of Britain's negotiations to leave the European Union, known as Brexit. Prime Minister Boris Johnson called tomorrow's election a critical choice for the country.
Do you go forward, get Brexit done, unite and level up across our country, or do we waste a year, 2 years more, dither and delay?
And choice is precisely what opposition Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn said the election was all about.
Tomorrow, the people all across the UK will go to vote and have a choice. They can elect a government that they can trust.
While the ruling Conservative Party have tried to keep the focus on Brexit throughout the campaign, the Labour Party has attempted to call attention to the country's National Health Service, which it says has deteriorated under Labour's since Labour left government in 2010. Now joining us on the phone from London with a preview of tomorrow's vote is reporter Henry Ridgewell. Henry, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Steve. Just 24 hours to go or less until the polls open here.
Yeah, so what are the polls saying? Does the Conservative Party still have a slight edge over Labour?
It does. The latest poll, which is one of the biggest conducted involving over 100,000 voters, suggests that the Tory party will gain a majority of around 28 seats in Parliament. But the significant thing is that's significantly down on the same poll that was conducted 2 weeks ago, which gave them almost double that lead. So the momentum appears to be ebbing away from the Conservatives. But the question is it ebbing away quick enough to give the opposition parties any chance of stealing power from the Conservatives? Or will Boris Johnson's party edge over the line and deliver him the majority that he craves and the ability to deliver the Brexit that he wants?
Well, that's the big question, right? Because we're in this election now because Brexit couldn't get done, and that's been his mantra throughout this campaign, get Brexit done. If the numbers are as we see now and on that downward spiral, if there is a slim majority for the Conservative Party, can he get Brexit done, given the attitude and the discussions we saw in the House of Commons earlier this year?
I think it appears he probably can if he gets that majority, simply because many of those lawmakers who caused a lot of trouble for both Boris Johnson and his predecessor, Theresa May, in trying to pass any Brexit deal, a lot of them have gone from Parliament. And many of those candidates who have now signed up and are campaigning as we speak have signed up to the Prime Minister's Brexit deal and say they will vote it through if we have a Conservative majority governments. And don't forget, there are different wings of the Conservative Party, some who wanted a very hard, clean break from Europe, others who were more keen on a softer Brexit. And both of those seem to be reconciled now towards Boris Johnson's Brexit deal. Both seem to be satisfied. So I think we can say that if he does get that majority, be it a few seats or 20 seats or 30 seats, we are looking at Brexit probably at the end of January under the deal agreed between Boris Johnson and the rest of the EU 27 members way back, it seems, doesn't it, in October.
This is yet another election taking place in Britain. We have about 50 seconds left. What are the people saying, having to go to the polls yet again?
There is a mixture of frustration at the political logjam here. A lot of poll fatigue, voting fatigue, I think, as well. But also a lot of dismay, I think, at the way that the campaign has been conducted by both parties or by all parties. There's been a lot of questionable figures put forward. To be frank, a lot of downright lies as well put out by not only the leading parties, but all parties. And so I think there's a lot of concern that the polarization we've seen in society is driving a new kind of politics within Britain. And I think after the election, there will be an effort among all lawmakers to try to claw back some of that integrity and honesty that many feel has been lost. Overall, I think, again, the public is split between those wanting to get on with Brexit and those desperately trying to stop it. And I just can't see any election reconciling or solving that division within Britain.
Henry Widrow reports for us out of London. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Good to be with you, Steve.
Now, it's not only Britain that's heading to the polls tomorrow. Algeria chooses its next president on December 12th as well. This as the country's judicial system has sentenced two former prime ministers to 12 and 15 years in prison, respectively, for corruption. Both were close allies of former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Edward Uranian reports several other top former government ministers were also given heavy sentences in the high-profile case.
The prison sentences handed down against former Prime Ministers Ahmed Ouyahia and Abdelmalek Salal were harsh, given that no former Algerian Prime Minister has ever been put on trial before. Ouyahia received a 15-year sentence, while Salal received 12 from Algeria's Sidi Ahmed Court. Several other former ministers were given heavy sentences in the corruption case involving automobile manufacturing. Algerians are due to go to the polls Thursday to elect a new president to succeed longtime former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who stepped down in April, citing poor health. Bouteflika had been expected to run for a fifth term that same month before elections were postponed due to widespread popular protests. Dr. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that he thinks the sentences are intended to give Algerians the impression of the rule of law so that their votes may be less radical. The Algerian people, he says, sees the gangrenous rot of the political system and need real change to move towards a better future. Algerian political analyst Arabi Al-Zawak told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that the corruption case against the former government officials was meant to show voters that the country's military would no longer tolerate the corruption of the Bouteflika era. It is legitimate for businessmen to make a profit, he said, but public officials are expected to serve the people. Large popular protests against the elections took place Monday in the coastal city of Oran, as well as the capital, Algiers. Many Algerians believe that the five candidates running for president, two of whom are former prime ministers, do not represent a serious break with the Bouteflika era or the country's post-independence regime. Algeria's military commander, Army Chief of Staff General Ahmed Kaad Saleh, has urged Algerians to go to the polls to give the country new leaders. Many Algerians, especially the military, worry that there could be a repeat of the chaos and violence of the 1990s following an aborted presidential election won by Islamist Abbasi Medini. Election turnout at Algerian consulates in Paris and several other European capitals is reported to be light. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Climate activist Greta Thunberg says that businesses and political leaders are misleading the public by holding negotiations that are not leading to real action against warming temperatures, which she referred to as a climate emergency.
Only setting up distant dates and saying things which give the impression of that action is underway will most likely do more harm than good, because the changes required are still nowhere in sight. The politics needed does not exist today, despite what you might hear from world leaders.
Thunberg was also named Time Magazine's Person of the Year for 2019. The 16-year-old was lauded by Time for starting an environmental campaign in August of 2018, which became a global movement, initially skipping school and camping out in front of the Swedish parliament to demand action. Former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, a longtime environmentalist, said the magazine had made a brilliant choice. On Tuesday, the Trump administration got a bashing from its own countrymen during the 25th United Nations Climate Conference in Spain. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a Democratic presidential contender, former Secretary of State John Kerry, and actor Harrison Ford all criticized the administration for abandoning the 2016 Paris Agreement on Climate. VOA's Zlatissa Hoek has that part of the story.
A group of protesters gathered outside the conference venue in Madrid on Tuesday to call on Japan to abandon coal-fired power plants.
Japan is holding back progress. They refuse to put forward more ambition, and they continue to fund coal.
Massive protests took place in Japan's capital and other major cities worldwide ahead of the Madrid conference. Most of the participants were young people.
Let's listen to young people around the world who will inherit what we have wrought. Their future has already been diminished by our past.
Speaking at an event in Madrid, actor Harrison Ford praised young people for their courage and criticized the U.S. government for a lack of it.
In 2017, my country's federal government demonstrated a lack of courage, threatening to pull out of the Paris agreements.
U.S. President Donald Trump has repeatedly denied the science of climate change and has been a staunch supporter of the fossil fuel industry. But many local governments, corporations, and private groups remain committed to supporting clean energy sources, among them Bloomberg Philanthropies.
I do want the world to know that Americans are continuing to work on climate change, even with a climate denier in the White House. And one of the things that's fascinating is we have been closing coal-fired power plants at the same rate during the Trump administration that we did during the Obama administration.
But Obama's Secretary of State John Kerry expressed disappointment at a lack of progress on climate change.
We thought we were on our way. And then, tragically, the new leader of my country decided to tell people in the world, perhaps as a demonstration of his education, that China was responsible for this, that it's a hoax.
Kerry said no country has done its part since the 2016 Paris Agreement, and that the world's worst polluters, including China, India, and the United States, actually increased carbon emissions since then. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Thomas Blondet, and managing editor Kate Pound-Dawson, we thank you for joining us today. Now, you'll be able to find in-depth coverage of world events and news on our website, voanews.com. And don't forget, with our mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you anytime, day or night. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.